Majorca, and you say Majorca, I say
Majorca,
and you say
Majorca,
Majorca, Majorca, Majorca, Majorca, let's call the whole thing off.
Hey, welcome to episode 6.
Well, that's sounding great.
Yeah. Sounding really good.
Dong. Lovely.
Who's got the biggest glass?
Oh. Welcome to episode 6-ish of the Majorca Majorca podcast. We have moved into our garden to try and avoid Auntie Nelly, our heavy breathing dog, from interfering in our podcast, but here she is barking.
Hang on.
And heavy breathing.
Oh my goodness.
So, anyone need to borrow a dog for a bit? So, and it being Spain and us being in our garden, there'll no doubt be an authentic two-stroke moped whizzing past at some point as well. So you'll know we're really
going to be a
we're
fiesta.
Properly in our back garden.
Exactly. So I'm Oliver Nielsen. This is Vicky McLeod, and joining us today is
a hybrid.
A hybrid. Well, I would put you in nice terms. Our daughter, stroke hybrid.
How are you? How is everybody today?
Good.
It's hot, isn't it? Actually,
yeah. It's actually nicer today than it has been in a few days. It's not as, mind you, I think it's because I haven't done any actual proper work.
Yeah.
But it's quite pleasant.
Over the sea twice, so it's. It's a proper Sunday, but it's hot in the outside, but gorgeous in the sea. So proper summer, anyway.
We should apologise for our lack of podcast episodes. It's all down to me, really. It's my fault.
Well, and a bit me too, actually. We've been busy earning a living.
Been busy and travelling as well.
And I went
to France last week.
It's kind of sapping as well, isn't it? When it's not quite as cold, when it's not as hot as this, you can sling a podcast in at 2 o'clock in the morning, which you probably noticed we already do. Whereas it's this time of where they just, I need to go to bed.
I can't, I have to sleep.
I'm too hot.
But so apart from it being hot and working, I've also been travelling. And I've been to France and back. Before the quarantine began, actually.
Before the quarantine to the UK?
No, before the quarantine to France. So France got one as well now?
No.
Is it the other way around?
As it stands. Britain is quarantining visitors from France to the UK, as they are with Spain and Austria and Croatia and lots of other places.
Isn't Germany also doing from Spain?
Germany is also doing that from Spain, or a similar system. But this week, the British actually took a country off the list. So
Portugal
was on the list.
Portugal.
No.
But somebody did make that mistake. It's not just me.
No. There's been a long-standing opinion around here that Vicky was somewhat surprised when we pointed out that Portugal wasn't an island and was in fact nailed onto the left-hand side of Spain.
And after her living in Spain for the past 16 years,
well, anybody who knew me at school will know about how few times I did well in geography.
And it must be pointed out that it was you that just brought this up.
Yeah, I know. It must make me laugh.
So how was your trip to France?
It was okay.
Is Auntie Nelly exploding again?
Okay, she stopped. It was okay. It was kind of weird going through Palma Airport because I got there at about 10 o'clock in the morning and there was nobody else there. 10 o'clock in the morning in the second week of August, and there was no one there. There was nobody.
Like raving of tourists.
Not exactly. It's normally full of people, and there was hardly anybody there.
Seen a few social media posts from people this week doing exactly that, travelling through Palma Airport, and it is more or less completely deserted.
And then going to, I flew to Bordeaux, and I went on EasyJet, and that was all okay. You know, it was all fine. We all had to wear our masks and everything. And it's not very nice having to wear a mask all the time, but you just get on with it.
It's taken the fun out of airports, if you found any fun there at all. It's not there anymore.
Well, I've got to say, I never really found airports that much fun anyway. But what are you doing?
We're attempting various different ways of shutting Auntie Nelly
soundproofing
up.
Soundproofing that garden.
Gigi's trying to soundproof the garden. It's not going to work. She'll just come through the cat flap.
Hmm.
She's very determined. We should just base. That's what we were going to do. We're going to put a picture of Auntie Nelly on our Instagram so that you can see what she looks like, because I think that once you see how cute she is, you'll forgive her for her crazy breathing, her
appearance really does match her personality.
Mm. Yeah, so I was traveling, and then also a couple of weeks ago I had a coronavirus test.
Yes,
The council rang me up.
A random, you've won the lottery, kind of.
Kind of. The council rang me up. The Ayuntamiento of Andratx called me. In fact, the ex-mayor rang me and said, hello, Vicky, would you like to come for a coronavirus test? And I was, thank you very much. Yes, I will come for a coronavirus test.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good thing that they're testing randomly. It's, in the past, when people talk about people, as you've probably seen on your social media feeds, everybody's social media feeds, there's a lot of differing opinions about numbers, and they're probably right to be taken with a pinch of salt. You know, in the past, in the early days of the outbreak, lots of countries, because they didn't have access to many tests, were testing people when they showed up sick to hospital, which I guess you would do if you didn't have many tests. But it showed a very high level of positive case, you know. So if you're testing people who say, I feel a bit ill, and your conclusion is, yes, you are ill, that's fair, you know, that's kind of logical. But if you start testing the general public at random, whether they feel sick or not, then you get a much better idea of how many people have it, whether they're, you know, people are getting it and not feeling sick or just not getting it at all. It gives you better data to work from, which is important. So I'm glad to see they're doing random tests, but I'm glad to see them doing them on you rather than me.
Well, in the spirit of our journalism and everything, I did take a little recording device with me.
Surreptitiously?
Yes, I pretended it was my phone.
We'd better have a listen then, I guess.
Well, I'll just tell you that. I'll just tell you the setup before we play the clip, because, you know. It was outside in the health centre in Port Andratx. And it was basically, the health centre has got, obviously has an inside, but it also has an outside. And the outside is not normally where you would go to see your doctor. But this time it was, you queued up at the gate. A policeman let me in. It was all being controlled by the cops. And then I had to fill in a few bits of paper. And then I had to go and sit on a chair outside of a window on a plinth. And a nurse inside of the health centre did the tests on me, and then I had a body mass index scan, and then they took my height and my weight, which is why I'm now on a diet. It was like, oh, right, the lockdown bread, it did actually stick to my bones.
Was it a kind of like, well, so we're here for a test, but we might as well measure a bunch of other stuff?
No, I think that actually I know what they're doing, because I know that your body weight is an indicator as to how you would deal with coronavirus, as in if you're overweight or you've got diabetes or various other kind of underlying conditions, then you are apparently more likely to suffer more kind of problems if you,
it's also
if you
just
have the virus.
data, isn't it? As much as you can measure of anything. You
know? I guess so. But they didn't take my blood pressure, for example.
No, but I mean, you know, there's lots of things they possibly, you know, BMI or weight, height is easy things to take.
Yeah, but so is your blood pressure.
Yeah, yeah. So
anyway, so let's play the clip.
Okay, brace yourself.
Yes, brace yourself.
Vea, en la nariz no duele, ¿vale? Es un poquito molesto, ¿vale? Muy bien, muy bien. Cosquilla.
Muy bien. Un poquito molesto.
Venga, ya abre la boquita, ¿vale? Abre la boquita, saca la lengua. Muy bien.
Genial. Oh, wow.
Listo.
Ya está.
Vale, quiero un poquito de hielo, ¿vale?
Oh.
Está fresquito.
Holy moly, that sounded horrendous.
It was just funny. It didn't hurt really. I was nervous more than anything else, because I just really thought, are you going to stop? You're going to stop there? No, you're not going to stop. You're not going to stop there. Oh my God. Literally, it felt like she was swabbing my brain.
Mm.
So, yeah.
I guess we'll all have one sooner or later.
I guess so. And I mean, I was glad to be asked.
I'm very, very much glad that it was you rather than me.
Yeah, because you'd have made such a big fuss.
I'd have screamed like a girl.
You would. Nothing wrong with screaming like a girl, though, boy.
There is if you're a boy.
So basically, it was like a coronavirus drive-through.
That is actually a really good description, because it was outside, I guess, because of hygiene measures and reducing the amount of possibility of contagion.
Well, that's what they do in the UK and Germany, isn't it? Literally drive-throughs. Yeah, they set them up in car parks. So
didn't know that.
Yeah. With limited success, but it makes some sense anyway. Mm. So, well, we're very keen to hear the results.
I am. A-OK, thanks very much for asking.
All clean.
I'm all good.
Well, you were then.
Yes. No. Who knows
you
now?
You might be ridden with it now.
So are you then, if that's the case.
That's true.
Anyway. But I mean, like, I think that the incidences of coronavirus are increasing in Spain, whether or not they are so much in Mallorca, I don't know.
Actually, well, what's the date today?
It's 23rd
of August. So, I mean, cases are on the up everywhere, actually, more or less. In Spain in general, in Mallorca, less so, but they're on going up, but in the UK, in Germany, in France, everywhere, really. So it seems that we're on our way towards a second spike. There's a lot of people trying to work to avoid it, and there's lots of discussion about whether there's an immunity now that people have it, but there's more data to be collected. But we should say about, I mean, we should say about Spain in general, that again, the clusters, the overwhelming majority of the cases are in Madrid and a few other metropolitan areas. It's true to say they are on the rise in the Balearics, but by nowhere near as much. And we're currently, well, I suppose you can virtually call the holiday season over now, I'm afraid. Most of the major markets for the Balearics have introduced some form of quarantine for their citizens returning, which has met a lot of people off.
Yeah.
A lot of hotels, bear in mind, we're not even at the end of August yet. A lot of hotels are closing up already, have closed already, considering closing in the next couple of weeks. Not all of them, by any means. So if you want to come here and you still can, then there are places to stay for sure, but you might want to be careful with your booking and with your flights and all of those sorts of things. Yes.
There is a small rumour that the UK is going to do a little bit of an L turn, as it were, not a U turn exactly, but an L turn on its quarantine rules because of the theme we were talking about before with Portugal. They may also start looking at other areas, for example, the Balearics and the Canaries, because they want to...
Yeah, actually, we didn't finish what we were talking about with Portugal, so we got sidetracked on your stupid geography.
Anyway,
Portugal was on the list for the UK so that until they made this decision, if you were returning from Portugal, you had to quarantine 14 days in the UK. They've taken that off, so effectively they declared Portugal safe again. And there was something, I think the Times wrote this week, about potentially...
I've seen it in a few places.
Yeah, potentially the UK... Because they've previously taken the stance that we're going to make a decision based on an entire country. So Spain is safe or not safe, or Italy is safe or not safe, rather than talking about regions. And there was some talk, I know the Balearic government, when the quarantine for UK travellers was imposed, they went absolutely straight to them and said, come on, you know, how about making places like the Canaries and the Balearics exempt from those quarantines because the cases here are much lower than in other places in the mainland.
Mm.
They said no at the time that they couldn't really maintain region by region comparisons. They could also not, you know, for instance, if you were in Madrid and you wanted to come to London and you were quarantined, if we just hop on a quick flight to Palma and then another one to London,
exactly,
for instance. And I can see something in that. But I have to say, even if the British government turns around and says tomorrow, yeah, okay, we'll let people travel backwards and forwards to the Balearics, the hotels are more or less shutting, the flights are more or less cancelling. And I don't know that it's going, but, you know, the advice from every major travel journalist and the UK is you need to make sure that if you're booking that you can live with a short range change or live with a quarantine or not. So there is still places to stay.
But life goes on in Mallorca anyway.
It certainly does.
Things are still happening. This week we went and picked grapes.
We did, actually, the second time at Fincas Ses Rotes.
Yes, so that was really fun.
It was. Yeah. I didn't end up in hospital this time, so I'm getting better at this. We went a couple of weeks ago and I managed to rip a hole in my thumb.
Yeah.
It's only 15 minutes drive to the hospital, so I was there and back in an hour.
Well, look out for some decent wine in the future from them. I think it's going to be pretty good.
They brought back some just grape juice without any alcohol, and that was quite nice.
Really?
Yeah.
What was it like?
It was very sweet, I must say, but it was really, really good.
Mm. And you had a sip of the wine as well, didn't you?
Yes.
What did you think about that?
All went to my head.
Really? Did you get really swimmy?
A little bit.
Really?
I know.
Fair enough.
I'm 14.
That is true. Well, actually, I remember drinking Top Deck Shandy when I was about 11 and going basically dead from the legs up.
We used to have Thunderbird. Did you ever have Thunderbird?
Not when I was 11.
No, but I mean, like, when you were, like, 15.
No.
Really? And plus, I couldn't have more because, you know, I was driving, so...
Yeah.
She was driving some kind of wacky off-road truck around the vineyard.
It was fun. What a great day.
That was good.
But also lots of scandal.
Oh, the king.
Yes.
Oh, yes, actually. There was a...
This is your favourite subject at the moment.
Well... as we mentioned a podcast or two ago, King Juan Carlos has legged it from Spain for various complicated reasons. His suggestion
that he was going to South America.
There's quite a bit of scandal swirling around him, and the net seems to be closing on it a bit. He's not very popular anyway, so he thought he would leave Spain, and he sort of he pitched it as a noble gesture to make it easier for his son to rule. That may or may not be the case, but it also he is being chased by quite a lot of allegations of various different things. Possibly some of them might end up with criminal proceedings. So it might not be the altruistic gesture it looks like. It might, frankly, be legging it to a friendly country to avoid getting charged with something. But he went missing for a few weeks, really. Nobody knew where he was. I think, what is it, the UAE.
UAE. Where is that? Just checking.
Dubai? It's sort of Dubai-ish around there. There's lots of little, I have to say I'm a bit confused, but there's a few little city-states, aren't there? Dubai and Bahrain and things. But anyway, so the BBC actually did a really popular, really interesting programme this week. And it actually made more headlines in Spain than it did in the UK, because his former bit on the side, his mistress, who is, I'm going to read this out, Corinna Suzanne Wittgenstein.
So German?
I think she might be Swiss or something. Maybe Swiss, German. Oh, no, Danish-born business consultant who was brought up in Germany.
Ah, okay.
So, right. She was his long-standing, apparently one of his, one of a number of his long-standing mistresses. And she was present when he was on a hunting trip to Botswana in 2012 when he shot an elephant. Now, believe it or not, Juan Carlos apparently paid for the trip as a present for her son's 10th birthday. Juan Carlos paid for a hunting trip to Botswana for her son's 10th
birthday. That's appropriate, isn't it?
I know.
Most people get a bike.
He probably wanted a Messi shirt or something, which I'm sure he could have got him. But no, he got to go and watch the man who was having an affair with his mum shoot an elephant.
Every 10-year-old's dream.
What more could you want? Yeah. Anyway, so that was the beginning of his problems. This program actually talks about this, and it talks about the potential setup, actually suggesting that this trip was always meant to drop the king in public, to drop the king in the poo, because it was always going to be leaked that effectively Republican elements, so people who didn't like the royal family, wanted to try and get Juan Carlos out of power so that they could take legal action against him for various things, which you're immune to doing if you are actually the king. So they thought, so this is the gist of the program, was that if you effectively make it difficult for him to stay in power, he has to leave power, and then you can indict him for his various different misdemeanors, potential misdemeanors. Oh. It also centers on the fact that he gave Miss Suzanne Wittgenstein a gift of 60 million euros.
My God.
The king reportedly...
How much?
60 million euros. Very... You see, if I was 10 years old, I'd rather have 60 million
euros. Yeah, and watch an elephant get killed.
And so, because there was a building of a railway line in Saudi Arabia that was then awarded to a Spanish company to build, it's a multi-billion dollar contract, the king effectively got a kickback from the royal family, from the Saudi royal family, of $100 million. Now, it goes probably without saying that the tax man apparently knew absolutely nothing about this. And there is some thought that it ended up in his mistress's bank account as a way of avoiding tax. But she says, no, it was a pure gift of love. There are elements within the Spanish government, as you can imagine, might want this money back. except they probably spent it. Anyway, so as a result, so if you look, you really need to listen to this program, actually. It was on Radio 4. This past week just gone, so probably about the 20th, something like that. It's called Crossing Continents. So if you go and look that up, it'll probably be available, like most of these BBC radio programmes, for a while. Somebody whistling.
Neighbours.
And I'm just going to look this up now. It was called, what was the name of the thing? The King, His Lover, and the Elephant in the Palace. Crossing Continents.
Very BBC clever. Radio clever title.
Yeah, that is, that's a good title.
I'm going to have a listen to that. It was quite the story of intrigue and murkiness, as you can quite imagine, actually. So, and this story is a long way from done. I have to say, having looked at the press, the Spanish press, because this lady has never spoken to the press before, and it was the British, the BBC that she spoke to, so hence the large amount of interest in Spain. I didn't see many people coming out in sympathy with the king on it, I have to say. It's,
how could you?
Well, look, some people will defend them.
There'll always be someone defending them.
There's all kinds of stories.
His mum, if she was alive, would defend him.
There's all kinds of stories.
Mum will always defend them, unless they've got bad mums.
All kinds of stories of the Secret Service raiding her flat in London, all kinds of Spanish Secret Service raiding her flat in London, all kinds of stuff, looking for various different bits of evidence. So this is a story that's a long way from dead. And it's quite an interesting one. So look it up. Again, Crossing Continents, BBC Radio 4. The King, His Lover, and the Elephant in the Palace. That was it, wasn't it?
Let's then talk about something that's a little bit more cheery.
Okay.
The last thing on our list of things to talk about today is the recent arrival of baby sea turtles in Menorca.
Yeah, actually, this is the Mallorca Mallorca podcast, but...
It's the Mallorca Menorca podcast. But
we're claiming
today
that as one of our own because it's just next door.
Such a good thing.
It is a good thing. I mean, it's one of the upsides of having, you know, I think it's the same all over the world, isn't it? The coronavirus has stopped or reduced temporarily, at least, a lot of pollution and all of that kind of stuff. So lack of tourists and boats and things in the Balearics has actually ended up with a successfully nesting turtle that's hatched into equal baby turtles.
Equal babies. Did you know we were at the aquarium? Was it last week or the week before now?
Probably the week before.
Yeah, and what were we there for?
To interview a lovely man called Marco.
Well done.
Who who is a volunteer in the program of saving baby sea turtles in the Balearics, or in Spain, Balearics.
The Balearics, yeah.
And we got to meet quite a few turtles, one of which was saved from just around the corner in some town.
Mm.
It was called Telma. She had an amputated fin.
Yes.
And then one big dude, he had a GPS tracker on his back.
He did.
It was a big lad.
Big boy.
Yeah, and it was very interesting to hear what they said. And what was his advisor's name? The
Chiska.
Chiska, that's it.
Yeah.
Who was very helpful as
well. She's lovely. So we're going to do an episode next week about turtles. But there's two things about turtles that everybody should know right now. Yeah.
Okay.
Because this is really important because turtles are being found all over the place in distress because they're got plastic on them, they're caught up in what's called ghost nets or ghost line, which is basically fishing nets that have been discarded and thrown away by a fisherman. And Marco said that the most important thing you can do if you find a turtle like that is not to take the plastic off, because everybody thinks that they're doing the right thing, but actually if the plastic is around a joint on the bit where a fin meets the body, for example, if you undo that, what can happen is all the toxins that have been collecting in the fin can go into the turtle's body and basically kill it. So it's much more important to get the turtle to a port as soon as possible. And there are special boxes in all of the ports where they animals can be deposited, and then a volunteer will come and rescue.
They do some amazing stuff actually at the aquarium, don't they? They are, if there is an emergency with an animal, they are there, whatever time, day or night, aren't they?
It's a really good project. It was quite a privilege to be allowed in there.
Yeah,
actually.
And we learned there that when they get what is it called? The nest of the sea turtles.
Oh, yes, this is the other thing, really important.
Nest of blue sea turtles that was born last year on a beach in Menorca and was brought to Palma Aquarium. They are basically trained to not go to plastic. They are...
Really?
Yeah, they have like these bunches of like fishing nets and plastic bottles, and they hold out like a bit of food and a bit of plastic. And they always train them to go to the bit of food instead of the bit of plastic, and they hold like plastic bags and all sorts of plastic.
Wow. Okay.
And they train them to go to the food and just to avoid plastic at all costs. That's Yeah. I thought it was really clever.
Yeah, I thought so too. But the other thing, the other point I wanted to make was about if you find a nest. The likelihood of seeing a nest, a turtle nesting, very small, but you might see the movements that a turtle's made.
They nest in the middle of night, don't they? They lay eggs in the middle of night.
I think very early in the morning. Oh, yeah. And they make a kind of sculling movement as they're going back into the sea, obviously. They need to get back in. And they lay their eggs. The mummy turtle lays her eggs in the sand. She doesn't hang about. She just lays her eggs and then goes. So if you see a kind of sculling movement of leading back into the water, then there's a good chance that in that area there is a nest of eggs. So again, alert the authorities. Don't go digging.
Hmm.
Tell the lifeguard or ring
112. Actually,
yeah, 112.
Yeah, you can call 112 and they'll ring up the nearest.
Yeah. So you can. And then this sort of thing's taken really seriously. So. Nobody's going to be mad at you if you're not wasting anybody's time, basically.
It's taken very seriously in the environment here, isn't it? We've seen you know, it's a like all places, there's lots of different pressures on it. Lots of tourists and lots of people building and driving cars and riding and sailing boats. It's like with the Posidonia, you know, which is the seagrass under a lot
That's
of myorchids. It's very important.
Highly protected.
Very highly protected. And if you go and throw your anchor overboard into the seagrass.
Woe is you.
You do get checked.
Woe betide
depending
you.
Where you are, but particularly busy places like Estrenk, which is a very popular beach. If you've chucked your anchor in the Posidonia, you will get a very, very hefty fine.
Because Posidonia takes a very, very long time to grow back. We've learned about this in school many, many times.
Yeah.
And they say it takes about 50 years, I think it takes a very long
like
time.
Two, 5 centimeters every 2 years. Or
yeah, it takes a very long time for Posidonia to get back to its original length, and it's very highly protected. It's a home for many, many fish.
Yeah,
but like our local beach, there's many little black and silver fish that just hang around Posidonia.
If you go snorkeling around a little beach. When you're over the sandy bottom, there's not very much. There's the occasional thing. As soon as you go over the Posidonia, there's 10 times as many fish. You know, so you can see how very important it is. So if you're lobbing an anchor over the top of it and then dragging that anchor back in again, you used to see it. Maybe not. People are behaving themselves a bit more now, but a couple of years ago, you'd see people pulling up their anchors and all the Posidonia be draping off it, and that's gone. You know, and it takes a couple of years to come back.
I think it's pretty cool that everybody who lives here, as far as we know, anyway, everybody who lives here. Takes a lot of pride and care in the environment because you know, we do live in a pretty special place.
Yorkshire's a beautiful place and it must be protected. Because there aren't many places left like this, are there?
Well, there are, actually. But just because there are other places doesn't mean you shouldn't ignore the one you're in.
Yeah.
But particularly if you want to make your living out of tourists and things, you know, lots of, you know, you need to manage it. It'd be very easy to manage it if said, right, nobody come here. But it requires management, and they do it very well. And we've got loads and loads and loads of people to talk to in future episodes about this, haven't we? We know lots of people involved in the natural environment here. So we get to listen to you talking about turtles to Marco, or Marco talking to turtles.
We'll do turtles next week, and we will also do a bit about cliff jumping. But that's all for next week.
In the meantime, or probably next week, depending on how hot or how busy we get.
No, next week, we have to try and get ourselves
our good intentions are that this will be next week.
Yes.
So thank you very much for joining us. It's how do we get in touch?
Oh, yes. So if you would like to subscribe to our podcast, you have to just click subscribe on whichever podcast provider you are using, be it Apple or Spotify or Castbox or loads of them. Whichever one you fancy, just click subscribe on there.
Leave us a review if you can, or a thumbs up, or whatever
really
it is. That would be great.
If you could leave us a review.
And why not tell your friends?
That too. But if you want to follow us on social media, we are Majorca Majorca on Facebook.
As well.
And then we've got it on Instagram. And also we have Twitter. Ollie's supposed to be in charge of Twitter, but I don't think he's actually done anything.
No, he
with
certainly
it
hasn't. No.
We are Majorca Majorca Podcast on Instagram. Or you can just send us an email to majorcamajorcapodcast@gmail.com.
Please do. It's not as quiet as I thought it was, our garden, listening to it.
It's not as quiet, actually. I think the neighbours have decided they've lost something to keep whistling.
Right.
Maybe their dogs
I think they're finding their
up.
Dogs again.
That's it for now. See you next time.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening.
Mallorca, 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 let's call the whole thing.